Thank you to this week's sponsor, TNG Coaching. TNG Coaching's vision is to teach values through activity and experience, to guide creativity, instill confidence, champion self-worth, and celebrate identity. This journey begins by reflecting on our own performance, by collecting our thoughts and feelings on paper. Both positive and negative, we begin to discern ways to respond to challenges. Opening a personal dialogue and sharing concerns has been proven to create deeper bonds with peers. Journaling how these relationships evolve can help assign roles and build the support structure every team needs to function effectively. When complete, your journal will stand as a lasting reminder of your commitment to your cause and your ambition for personal and professional growth. You can find the Coach's Journal on Amazon through the link or go to tng.coach for more information.
Welcome to Recess Duty, a podcast for educators to come together to share struggles, but also celebrate successes by sharing stories and ideas in a safe and supportive environment to collaborate with one another. Here's your host, Levi Allison.
Hey everyone, this is Recess Duty with your host, Levi Allison. And today we're talking with the host of the popular podcast, Confessions of a PYP Teacher, Lou Gerlach. We'll be discussing their story and journey in education. Thank you so much for joining us, Lou. How are you doing today?
I am wonderful. I'm super excited to be here with you.
Aw, thank you so much. We've been working on PYP Chat for what, a year now or 6 months?
Yeah, something about 6 to 8 months. Yeah.
Yeah. It is so much fun. You bring such a great new perspective and you keep us on our toes and it's so much. So I knew you had to come. So Lou, for our listeners out there, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been in the PYP program forever, it feels like, journey, right? I began in international education in 2006. I decided to go off to Dubai, but I didn't know anything about anything, really. I just knew about the American system. And as I was being exposed to international schools, I realized that the IB program was it, and all the top schools were IB. And so then I started researching it. And next thing you know, I landed in Cologne, Germany, in a bilingual school. That was interesting. Imagine not speaking German and living in Germany. That wasn't the best plan. But it was such an amazing experience learning about the PYP for the first time. And I got to pretty much do anything I wanted, right? Experiment and really delve into inquiry and I don't know. It just like got me hooked, but I wanted some other experiences. So I returned back to Dubai and I went to an IB continuum school because I wanted to have that experience of seeing the progression of children, right?
For sure.
Go through this fabulous program and learn what are the different steps and what are the things kids need in order to thrive, you know, so that as a PYP teacher, I knew what to lay the foundation, right? Mm-hmm. That wonderful level. So, and it's just gone from there, really. And then my parents started to get ill. And so they begged me to come back home. So I returned back to the US and I don't know why, but I moved to Houston of all places. I love Houston. Anyone listening, I love Houston. I love Texas. It's just such a different thing or a different place, I guess, because I grew up in California. And Californians are chill. But now I picked up the y'all. So don't be surprised if I say y'all every 2 minutes, okay?
No worries from here. I'm from originally Kansas, but I lived a lot in Dallas. And my adopted family was there. And they would, every time I would say you all, they were like, you owe us a quarter. We don't say that down here. We say y'all. And it was really funny because it is so true. And you pick up that vernacular wherever you're going. Mm-hmm. And Lou, how crazy has it been watching the PYP, MYP, and DP start to really synchronize and see those skills progress? And, you know, it's amazing to see the exhibition. Then it's amazing to see the MYP project. Then it's amazing to see the DP art shows and the DP capstones that we see. It's really, when done right for a school, it is an extremely effective program.
Absolutely. And it's amazing to see children evolve into these young, independent people who can really solve problems that we as adults sometimes struggle with. And to be able to articulate possible outcomes that, you know, really are manageable, right? Mm-hmm. And that this is what we need right now in this world of confusion and division. We need learners who can think and build us back together. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I'm fascinated with all things PYP, and I continue to grow and learn. And sometimes I wonder, how did I land into the opportunities I have? But, you know, that's just fate. And that's also just sheer dumb luck, as they say, right?
Yes.
You end up where you are. But I will have to say, having the freedom to do what I love internationally, and then transitioning back into U.S. public schools was a shock. Yes. Absolute shock. You know, because you go from having the goal of developing these young people and doing it the best way possible to, okay, how are we going to navigate this within a testing framework? So that was really a challenge for me, I won't lie. So any of you out there that are listening, that are in the fight, keep fighting. Because I think what I have found is that with anything that you do in this world, any obstacles that you face, you have to figure out how to navigate around those obstacles. How do you manipulate the system to make it work still?
Yeah.
You know?
And I always say, you know, we have to work smarter. We have to learn from other people's mistakes, because we're not here on this earth long enough to make all the mistakes. And if we're going to try to make them all, we're not going to get very far.
No, absolutely not.
And absolutely. I agree. My sister is, hi, Katie, is a educator in the States. And when I go home for the summer and we just talk about education, she's like, you do what again? She always like, what are you talking about this inquiry? And there are some amazing schools in the States that do inquiry, but where I'm from, that is not what they do. It's very standard-based. It's very prescribed. It's very textbook heavy. And again, that works for some, and that works for some students. But for the general, I would say for the general amount of students, really that questioning, that passion and that exploration really gets kids to buy in into learning very quickly.
Absolutely. You know, and I was just talking with in a workshop today about, you know, the power of questioning and how do we scaffold that process for kids and why is it so necessary, especially in today's world. Kids are curious, right? But mm-hmm. oftentimes they don't know how to explore their curiosities. And so we have to give them the vehicle in order to do it. And asking those lower level questions as a practitioner just doesn't work, you know, because it yields to a low response. And then you think all real news is off of Facebook, right? You don't know how to vet. Once again, I love Facebook, but we have to know how to vet information and to operate within this world. So it's been an interesting journey, that's for sure. I have learned and grown so much.
I'm coming on my 9th year, I believe, in education. And I can honestly say I did not expect to be where I am when I started. I thought I was only going to go to Kuwait for a year or two and then go back to the States. I expected to pay off my student loans and go back to the States. Well, still haven't paid off those student loans, but still overseas.
But you probably traveled a lot, right?
Yeah. And I got to meet some amazing, fascinating people and hear amazing stories from all walks of life. And it's just been incredible. And coming from a very small town in Kansas, I never would have expected this for myself. And I always ask my dad, did you think I was ever going to do this to the extent like out of the globe, see all these things, work overseas? He said, not in a million years. He's like, I thought you were going to be a teacher in a small little school here in Kansas for 30 years.
Wow. And that's like what my mom was a teacher, and that's exactly what she did. And I remember her being fascinated, but also kind of slightly jealous in a way that I had those opportunities because her generation didn't have those opportunities.
Oh yeah.
You know, unless you were married and had kids and, you know, went as a package deal.
Yes.
And now there's so many opportunities, and I've considered going back abroad because it calls to you, right?
Hey, come back. We need some people here at Chadwick. Come back to us. Come back.
That would be kind of weird going back to that city, dealer.
Why is that?
Well, because my parents, that's where they had their engagement photos. And whoever thought that I would be living in a city where they took their engagement photos.
Right.
You know,
world works in mysterious ways.
Yes. No, I mean, Chadwick has a great reputation and a lot of invest in its people. I don't know what the future holds. I'm having a great time, though, helping teachers here in the States. Because a lot of people here, all they talk about is state testing and standardization. And so I love like telling them, well, I worked in the hood. I worked in the poorest area in Houston and we made changes. So if I can do it, you can do it. And I love that, you know, seeing people turn and feeling like a ray of hope that here are some practical strategies of how to bring inquiry and release some of the control and give some agency to kids. That is magical. So I don't know. It's kind of that new buzz that you have when you live abroad. It's kind of a different feeling here now.
And when you're having these conversations with people and educators that are unfortunately very test-based, because that is so important in our public school in the United States, is it controls almost everything, funding, grants, projects. How do you get them to get in buy-in? How do you get those teachers who grew up in this, now they're teaching this, how do you get that buy-in into the giving release and a little bit of agency in students?
Well, I think it's all talking to teachers at that level, saying that, you know, if you teach children how to critically think, they're more likely going to outperform on the state test. And so if you give some sort of thing, like a nugget of, have you considered that you teach them how to critically think, ask questions, research, do open-ended tasks. Yes, that takes away from, let's say, teaching to a test, for instance, mm-hmm. right? Trying to do that. But what you're going to have is you're going to have children who can think, who can reason, who can look at any problem and be able to then turn it around and be able to raise up their, you know, their academics and their performance. And so you have to think of the long-term range of the goal of what is it that you want. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I just could never buy into that methodology. I'm always of what's best for a child, and what's best for a child is that they learn. And something I was talking with another friend today is that, do we want to raise a generation of literate illiterates, of children who know how to read, but don't, because the only examples of reading that they see are academic. There's nothing for reading for pleasure. Mm-hmm. And what's also an interesting thing that, as we've talked about, I'm really interested in transforming library spaces. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason I got into it is because I worked in a school as a coordinator where the library had been closed for 6 years. That means that children who were in that school from pre-K up had never checked out a library book, which is a travesty. Oh. Think about that. And so if you never have had that pleasure of checking out books and then taking books home to read, and you're not allowed to take any books out of the classroom library, how are you going to ignite that love of reading just for pleasure? And so the beautiful thing is I was able to change that narrative in my school because it's a requirement of the PYP to have an active library. And so basically I basically did what I wanted. And I won. Oh, oops. I hope my boss and my former boss is not listening to this. But the reality is this. I knew, since the collection was mixed up and it was disoriented anyway, why not reinvent it and magically shape it according to the learning of the transdisciplinary themes? And so I physically restructured everything so that the students, and I look at it from the lens of a child. Like if you're interested, for instance, in something related to space and planet, well, if there is something next to it that's all about space, biographies about space explorers, then naturally it's going to be a leap. Ooh, I love learning about planets. Well, maybe now let me look at some people who've done it. And that's how you ignite that love of learning and reading, right? And I think so many people and so many schools don't place emphasis on that. And so that's another way that I'm trying to champion to help kids to take more ownership of their love of learning.
What a beautiful story and project that is. I can imagine revitalizing a library that's been closed for 6 years was a massive undertaking and a massive process. You know, you and I have talked about the creative process and design thinking and making a beautiful plan to go from here to here. How do you start something like that?
Well, I'll be honest. At first, it was very overwhelming. I promised something that I didn't know if I was going to deliver. The first time I did it last year, it took me almost a whole school year to do it. Because you're being pulled. We were also going through the authorization process. So I was still meeting with teachers, trying to reflect on unit planners, all of that stuff. But what was really amazing is the journey of my own PYP journey, right? And thinking about my own, I could say my own passion, right? What is it that ultimately kids need? They need a structure that's going to be easy for them. And I just naturally thought, well, why not go big or don't do it at all, right? Sure. So I physically looked at every book in the library and I started sorting. I probably wasted a lot of time because I ripped apart fiction collections and I realized, oh, maybe those were supposed to stay together. Oh. And so, you know, I mean, there were mistakes along the way. But at the end of the day, what was really cool was I aligned all of the nonfiction and took them away from that dreaded Dewey Decimal System. But what was amazing is then I looked at fiction that went with it so that children see the complete picture and not just here's nonfiction, here's fiction. Well, let's merge them together. And it turned out really beautifully. And of course, there were places for early readers, you know, and like Dr. Seuss, you know, that doesn't have, it's not going to touch any unit, right? Just building love of literature. And then there's the novels and that sort of thing. But now I'm doing it a second time at a school right now. And what's fascinating to me, it's so much clearer, the process and also the speed, because now you have a vision of how you want that to look, which is really cool. And I'm excited, you know, because I think it doesn't matter if you do it according to the PYP or not, but how about, you know, the importance is having a library that's useful and purposeful. And how are we designing it so that, once again, children feel agentic? They come in there, they're impassioned and empowered to read and to explore beyond what they normally do.
Yes. And I know our own library here, Vivian Sewell, worked a miracle on our library because she and I came here at the same time. And I just remember her saying, give me a year, I'll make this beautiful. Mm-hmm. It was very nice, but it needed some retouching. Mm-hmm. And within a year, it was magical. I was like, what, how'd you do this? She's like, well, it was a lot of work and a lot of labeling. And I was like, Vivian, this looks like magic. Librarians have always been very fascinating to me because I truly do believe you are someone of the most creative people to be able to think such big picture and such whole school-esque that you can create these extremely purposeful, extremely student-centered libraries that students want to go to. You know, I, as a kid, you know, I wasn't very connected to the library. But I see these kids at my school and they're going in during recess. They're going in during lunch. They're going in before school, after school, because they just love it. And when they go to the library and they've got their books that they're taking home, they're like, I have another book I get to take. And I'm like, how amazing is that, that creating of a culture of loving to read? I got goosebumps thinking about like, man, I wonder how much more I would enjoy reading if I started out that young.
Absolutely. And I think it's also now that libraries have like merged as like media. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like we're no longer like librarians, we're media specialists.
Yep.
And the fact that there's that media piece, but what I love is how libraries are merging towards makerspace. I'm absolutely gaga about those walls of Lego.
I know.
You know, And they're cheap. I mean, they're relatively not expensive. I mean, like $100. That's nothing when you think about how much is invested within a collection. But I think that because libraries have evolved, kids want to go back into those spaces, especially now after the pandemic.
Yes.
As the pandemic lingers, kids have been forced to go so digital. They're dying for tangible items, just as we're, hungry for human contact and face-to-face engagement. They're hungry for also being able to touch books and have that feeling that I had, like when you open up the book and you smell that print, right? And it's crisp and you're turning it. And this is why I still go into bookshops, right? I just want to go into a bookshop and just sit and hear paper. And that's kind of weird. I know.
No, I get it. Well, there's a reason why they sell candles that smell like new books.
I never thought about that. You're right. That is so true. And so that's been some passion of mine, is like that excitement I have is creating those spaces for kids. And so like current project I'm working on, I'm actually have like the almost like a bookstore type of mentality. There's like little niches and there's special like reading zones just for upper grade kids that only the fourth and fifth can go. Everyone else, they have to wait their turn. And then there's a teacher corner, right? Where they can just have their coffee and talk with each other and have their space. Because we as educators need that private zone as well. And oftentimes that's not, because we're part of that community too.
Wow, Lou, that is such an amazing project and that you're undertaking. I cannot wait to hear more about it. This is going to be so exciting to see on Twitter. And thank you so much for sharing this with us. You know, when we're looking for that interaction with that human interaction, you know, you do a lot of workshops, both virtually and both in person. How are you seeing that engagement from virtual to in person shifting?
That's a huge shift. And to be honest, when the IB shifted from face-to-face, well, to nothing really for a year and a half, right, to virtual, I remember when I started doing virtual workshops, to high heaven, because I took a face-to-face model and just said, I'll just do it on Zoom. And it doesn't work like that.
No.
Because you can be kind of like an, I hate to say it, but when you're face-to-face, you can be kind of like an expert, right? And then you give some activities. But when you're in a virtual landscape, it's all about the participant. And it's all about how are you hooking them into the engagement and getting them to think repeatedly? How are you getting them to, apply what you're trying to get them to understand to their own practice? And that is not easy to do, that's for sure. And I took a class about digital facilitation through an organization called Click Institute. And it really changed everything about what I do, because it helped me to look at how am I thinking about my participants instead of me. Really.
Yeah.
And leaders get certain ideas of what they need to have in their presentations or whatever. And the one thing that I learned in this process is that you are a facilitator of the learning, not presenting. That's amazing.
Yes, yes.
And so we're not there to share our voice. We're there to let other people share their voice. And that was a game changer. And it went back to that whole idea of inquiry. How much inquiry are we bringing into workshop experiences where learners are creating the meaning for themselves? Not us sharing the experience, our experiences and our stories, because our stories, it was actually, Ron Richart who said in a course I took that your aha moments is just new knowledge for somebody else. So when we're sharing all of our ahas and our fabulousness, they're just taking it in as like, okay, so what? Because it doesn't matter to them. It's not their aha. And that was like a game changer for me. I was like, oh, am I passing on my ahas to other people with no reason for them to care, really? And so then I started asking more questions, asking more than telling. The old adage, things that we learn in PYP that sometimes we forget as facilitators.
Yep. For sure. And I always try to tell my students, you know, I am not the best musician in the world. I'm not the best music teacher in the world. But what I try to do is be a facilitator of learning and help you explore things that you're excited about. Like, let's take these questions and let's go through them. And another, like, tying it back to our library discussion, like, how cool would it be to get student voice in how you shape a library? Now, I don't know what that would look like, but
it's so cool. Actually, I've had students in my recent project, they came in on day one. And oh, wow. I asked them, I actually had them physically help me place furniture and physically design it. Well, what should this look like? And I positioned to them, I said, look, I'd like to have a spot for fourth and fifth. What should it look like? And they're the ones who came in with the cozy chairs and the little end cap, you know, little seats like coat that you can sit crisscross applesauce on. So they're the ones, and they helped me physically move modular furniture to make the space and decided where should certain teacher areas be. And there was like an open teacher area and they're like, no, this is not cozy enough. So we need to put bookshelves here. And every day they've been helping me restructure where certain books should go, how to organize certain materials. And then they're also creating artwork for the library. They're creating, so basically I'm unpacking the themes of what the different concepts mean. And then they're picking the concepts that resonate with them and they're creating artwork so that we can put it up of like, here are examples of beliefs and values. And here's what family relationships look like and that sort of thing. So as other kids come in, they have an understanding of what's that whole transdisciplinary theme about.
Wow. And if you can get students involved in a project like that, holy smokes, what else can you do?
Exactly. Because now I've got third, fourth, and fifth grade kids. And then I'm going to have Indies first and seconds coming in to help me also, you know, with areas for them. But it's exciting, you know, because this is... I don't know if they can be champions for the library to their friends. You know, I've had a part in designing this. Come look at my artwork. When it's student-centered, then other students want to participate. That's for sure.
And the buy-in and the love is already there. It's not your library. It's their library.
Correct.
It's their space.
Exactly. And I'm not a permanent resident of that school, so I didn't want it to be my library design. I wanted the legacy to carry on and so that that love of learning carries on once I'm gone.
We ask all guests here at the Recess Studio, what do you remember about Recess growing up?
Oh, well, I was very shy. I did not speak until I was about 21. I was an English language learner. So I came to the States when I was 5 years old, or really 4 and a half, but entered kindergarten speaking Korean. So when I think of recess, I remember being by myself and trying to find my place in the world. And I remember, though, in fifth grade, a girl came to me. Her name was Kim Little. And the irony is she was very little. And she walked up to me on the first day of school, said, "Hi, I'm Kim Little. You want to be my friend and play with me?" And I remember that experience, like, changed the whole experience of going to that school because I had a friend on the first day. So that's what I associate with Recess Studio.
And just another thing, if we all need a little friend out there.
We only need one and make the difference, right?
Sure. Thank you so much. Before we wrap up, where can people find you if they want to connect with you on social media?
Well, on Twitter, my company is called ThinkChat, and you can find me at ThinkChat2020. And on LinkedIn, I'm at Lou Gerlach. It's L-U and G-E-R-L-A-C-H. And as you mentioned, Levi, my podcast is Confessions of a PYP Teacher. It is not as nice as this, okay? There's no dialogue. There's just me talking about random stuff that comes into my brain, okay? There's just tips and tricks about different things about the PYP that have helped me. I don't have any fancy intro music, nothing. It's just, hi, welcome. But it has been a help to me. It was kind of like my therapy session during the pandemic to help me to just like voice because I felt so isolated. And of course it helped other teachers. And I also have a website. It's thinkchat2020.weebly.com. So lots of free resources, tons of stuff also on teacher pay teaching.
All of those links are going to be in the show notes below. So please, listeners, go and check out Lou. She's an incredible human being. So glad you came here, Lou, today. Thank you so much for coming this week's episode of Recess Duty. Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss our next episode. I'm Levi Allison, and I hope you have a great day, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Recess Duty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, please share this podcast with other educators so they can join the fun. And that is the end of our recess duty.